the presence of every person who is with us this morning. It's always a not only a privilege, but I think a great pleasure for those who enjoy spiritual things to be together with the Lord's people on the Lord's day and to be about the business of our Father's kingdom. So we're grateful that you're here. If you're visiting with us, we're especially thankful for your presence and hope that you'll allow us to get to know you a little bit better after services are over in just a little while. A couple of years ago, I was asked to present some lessons on the life of Daniel to a group of younger people. So I did that, and as I prepared those lessons, I was asked to speak on the subject of Daniel, the power of one. Basically on the idea that Daniel illustrates the great influence that a person can have even if you're the only one trying to do what's right. And I hadn't thought about that very much until I studied Daniel's life with a view to preparing that topic. But as I studied Daniel's life, it really was astonishing to me the powerful ways that he does illustrate the great influence that an individual can have whether anyone stands with us or not. And so I want to share, not only this morning, but also in one of the lessons next Lord's Day, some of the thoughts that came out of that study. Not just for the sake of young people, I think these truths are very, very helpful to all of us because we all, on a fairly regular basis, find ourselves in situations where we have to decide to do what's right, whether the prevailing winds are blowing in our direction or not. We need to understand that doing what's right is the right thing to do, and that when we make an unreserved commitment to doing what's right, the Lord can use that even sometimes in very unpromising situations where it seems like we are in a very, very small minority. In the sixth chapter of Daniel, in the very familiar story of Daniel and the lion's den, when Darius, the emperor, had set 120 satraps over the kingdom and then three governors who would be over the satraps, and Daniel was one of those three governors. Verse 3 says, Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. But that displeased some of the other individuals who thought they ought to be placed in that position of preeminence, and so they persuaded the king to pass an ordinance that made it illegal to petition any god or man for 30 days except the king himself, or that person be thrown into a den of lions. Well, verse 10 says, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. It's one of just many instances in Daniel's life when he had to act alone, or if not alone, with very little support. I'm sure Daniel on this day didn't know who else would or would not obey the king's command or disobey it. But for his part, Daniel just decided to go ahead and do what was right, like he always had been doing, and trust God for the outcome. Daniel was a powerful man, a very influential man over a long period of time. Best I can figure in this instance of the sixth chapter of Daniel, he may have been as much as 80 or 90 years old when this took place. And so at this point, for a long time, Daniel had been serving the Lord faithfully and had become widely known as a very influential man. He had been in a number of situations where he had had the opportunity to set a godly example, and he had influenced a number of people. We would all like to have the influence of a Daniel. We'd like to be thought of in the way that Daniel was thought of. We'd like to have the opportunities to influence other people for good that Daniel had after his long, faithful life. But I want to suggest to you this morning that we can't have Daniel's influence without having his character. Influence is not just something that you pray for and that you wish you had, and maybe the Lord will bless you with it. Influence is something that grows usually over a long period of time out of decisions that we make to grow a godly character and eventually to be the kind of person that will be given the privilege of having influence over others. And so I want us to consider some things about Daniel that made him an influential man. Some things that he couldn't have had the influence that he had if he had not had these qualities. And I would put at the top of the list of Daniel's characteristics that made him as influential as he was the simple fact that as a godly man, he was not willing to compromise his principles. Now, when we talk about not compromising our principles, there's a difficulty. We need to distinguish between principles and policy. Our principles should never be compromised, but when it comes to policy, we need to be willing to bend and to give. And the give and take of human activities, when several people are working together on something, none of them should compromise their principles, but when it comes to matters of policy, how we implement those principles, then there has to be some give and take, or nothing would ever get done. The problem is, sometimes we don't do a very good job of seeing where our principles end, and now we're into matters of policy where there could be some negotiation and some compromise. I think I know some people who think that every position they take is a matter of principle and cannot be compromised. And those are very difficult people to deal with, if you've ever tried to work with them, if they think that every thought they have is absolutely set in stone and that there's no give and take at all in their lives. Well, that's a different kind of a problem. But if we're talking about something that really is a matter of principle, I'm talking about a principle that is enunciated in God's Word, something that has to do with godliness, we must not compromise those principles. Back in chapter 1 of Daniel, in verse 8, when he had recently arrived in Babylon as a young man and with some of his friends was selected to be trained for government service in the Babylonian court. And a part of that training would involve Daniel and his friends as pious Jewish young men eating some things that the law of Moses would not allow them to eat. They had a problem. Here's a situation where great pressure was going to be put on them to just follow the king's training program, and I'm sure it would have been with fear and trepidation. They would have imagined what might be the consequences if they said no to this. But it was a matter of principle, and Daniel wouldn't compromise about that. He simply decided, verse 8, he purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Too very often, when we are faced with a choice whether to do right or wrong, the pressure to do what's wrong is so great that we think, well, I know this is not right, and I'm not going to do this for the rest of my life, but in this situation, I don't have any choice but to bend my principles a little bit and go along here with something that's not right. That's what most people do. Under pressure, they will adjust their principles a little bit to avoid horrible consequences coming upon them. But Daniel wasn't that way. If it's a matter of right and wrong, Daniel was going to stand with what was right regardless of consequences. But it didn't matter to him what the consequences were as long as his conscience told him he was doing what was right. Proverbs 14 verse 12 says that there is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. If we determine what we're going to do based upon what we think the consequences are going to be, and if here seemingly harmful consequences are going to come from doing it God's way, then I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do what will produce the desirable outcome. For one thing, none of us has an accurate enough crystal ball that we can know what the future is going to be. We're all of us very poor at predicting what the consequences are going to be. But even if we knew in the short term that there were going to be some painful consequences, what's right is still right. And you couldn't have, at the end of your life, have the great influence that Daniel had if all of your life you hadn't been doing what Daniel did, and that is standing for what's right, period, regardless of consequences. That's integrity. That's a person whose convictions are not for sale. A person who will do what's right, even if it means his death. Chapter 6, he's thrown into the lion's den, not knowing whether he'll live through that life or not. But I'm quite sure if Daniel had known that the lions were going to eat him up, he'd have still gone ahead and done what was right, as he did on other occasions. In the New Testament, Paul said in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 12, I know whom I have believed, and I am persuaded that he is able to keep what I have committed to him until that day. Paul had entrusted himself to God. He was going to do what's right and leave it in the hands of God, knowing that eventually, all's going to be well with those who do what's right. I wish we had the time to go around the room this morning and let every person tell what has been the hardest decision of their life so far. A decision where they had to choose between right and wrong, knowing that if they chose to do it God's way, terrible consequences seemed like they were going to come along. I don't know if you've faced the biggest test in that regard of your life yet. Depending on how old you are, you may have met the big one already, and all the rest of the ones you'll face in the rest of your life may be smaller than the test you've already faced. But none of us know, do we? Big test, I don't care how old we are. For as old as Brother Wiles, his big test might be tomorrow. Even after all the tests he's faced up to now, we just don't know when we're going to be thrown into some very difficult circumstance where the choice will be clear between right and wrong, but the pressure will be to do what's wrong, thinking, well, I don't have any choice in this instance but to bend the rules, and as soon as this crisis is over, then I'm going to get back to doing what's right. Well, let me tell you, if that's the way you operate, you won't ever have the influence that Daniel had. If you think you're going to increase your influence by compromising your convictions, you're sadly mistaken. People who have influence are people who have principles that are not for sale at any price. So that's the first thing I'd put at the top of the list of why Daniel had the influence that he did. But number two, and I would attach number two to number one, and you see it here in Daniel chapter 1, verse 8, where he purposed in his heart that he was not going to eat these things that would have been unlawful for him to eat, but he requested of the chief eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Daniel was a man of principle, but he was also a man who knew how to be courteous and fair. And I think that's important. All the more important if we are firm in our convictions. I think there's a certain type of person who seems to think that being right gives you the opportunity or the freedom to be obnoxious. And it just doesn't. Daniel here took a firm stand, but he took it courteously. And he took it fairly. He was willing to come up with a fair plan for how it could be demonstrated that he'd do all right even if he didn't eat these things that the king commanded. He was willing to make every adjustment he could so that a fair plan of action could be developed. He requested. He didn't go in and demand, I'm not going to do this, and what I'm saying is right, and you're just going to have to make the adjustment. No. He courteously requested permission not to do this and offered a fair test so that the king could be satisfied. Paul makes an interesting statement in the New Testament in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 21 when he says, providing honorable things, that is doing what's known to be honorable, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. I don't know if you thought about it or not, but the Christian is obligated to operate with a standard of honor that goes beyond what you'd have to do if the Lord were the only one you were dealing with. In this instance, Paul was wanting some precautions to be put in place lest even any charge be made that he was dishonest in handling these funds that he was going to be carrying down to Jerusalem for the needy brethren. He wanted some witnesses to go with him that could guarantee that he had not stolen any of those funds. Paul's an honest man. He didn't need witnesses. He knew he didn't need witnesses. But Paul wanted to make sure not only that he did the honorable thing, but that he elevated himself above the level of even suspicion of wrongdoing, even if that required taking some extra precautions. Paul said, I want to do what's honorable not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. Let me tell you. Maintaining an honorable reputation will require you to take some precautions that you wouldn't have to take if the Lord were the only one you were dealing with. And the person who rears back and said, well, I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm doing what's right. I don't care what... No. As a godly person, you've got to care what the appearance of your actions are. And if it requires you taking some extra precautions, then I think that's the kind of man Daniel was. He was willing to be courteous and fair and do everything he could, short of compromising his principles, to work with those whom he had to work with. And that was a big part of his integrity and his influence. Don't you know people who stand for what's right, but they seem to want to be as obnoxious about it as possible? They think that gives them the right to be a bully and to be pugnacious and combative and all of that. And don't you know other people who take an equally strong stand for what's right, but they know the meaning of courtesy and fair play? Who are you going to be influenced by? You'll be influenced by the person who stands for what's right, but has learned the lessons of courtesy and fairness as well. In the third place, I'd suggest that Daniel's life illustrated, and you would have seen this if you'd known Daniel in his lifetime, that godliness works. Daniel didn't just stand for what's right. By implementing what's right in his life, he was exhibit A of the fact that God's way works, that it leads to a good life, that it doesn't hold you back or poison your success at all. 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8 in the New Testament, Paul talks about the fact that godliness is not only profitable for the life to come, but also for the life that now is. Bodily exercise, he said, profits a little, but godliness is profitable for all things, having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come. You live a life of consistent godliness like Daniel did, you're going to be doing things not only that are right, but things that in the long run will be seen to be workable. People will appreciate the quality of the life they see you living when they see that living based on right principles has good results in a person's life. That leads really to a better life than what they've got. In the New Testament, in the Greek New Testament, it's interesting that of the words for good that the Greeks had, and they had synonyms in their language just like we do in ours, the Greek word kalos was one of the words for good, but kalos tended to be used to refer to a kind of a goodness, not just that was strictly right from a legal standpoint, but the kind of goodness that has some attractiveness to it. That which is seen to be fine or praiseworthy or attractive. And so in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 12, when Peter talks about living in the context of persecution, where you might be persecuted for the faith, he says, maintain honorable or good conduct in the eyes of the unbelieving world. And the word that he uses there for good or honorable is our word kalos. That means do what Daniel did, and the more dangerous the situation is, the more it's necessary for you to live a good life in the sense of a life that is seen to be an attractive, praiseworthy life. A life that exhibits that God's way is not just right, it's workable. It's the good way. And that was the word that Jesus used, of course, in Matthew 5 and verse 16 when he said, let your light shine so that others may see your good works, that is the workableness of your righteous life, and may be led to praise God because of the principles that led to that life. When people look at your life, and they know you're a Christian, and they know you have some principles, when they look at your life, do they see a life that's a high-quality life that leads them to praise the principles that produce that kind of life? Is your life exhibiting the workableness, you know, the practical workableness of God's Word? Well, I hope that it does. Daniel's life did, and that was a big part of his influence. If people see us standing for the truth, and then they look at our lives and they see a mess, then they might rightly question whether these principles have any attractive application in a person's life. Our lives need to exhibit not just the truth of God's Word, but the workableness, the goodness of it, the attractiveness of it. That was the kind of person that Daniel had. Then in the fourth place, Daniel acquired what I just call the right stuff. Going back to the early astronaut days, you remember, those of you who are old enough to remember when the first astronauts were selected, national search was made to find seven people to be the first astronauts. And I mean, to even get in the application process, you had to have a list of qualifications, physical, intellectual, and in a lot of other, even emotionally and psychologically, a list of qualities that was so long most people need not even apply. And so the seven astronauts that made it were considered to have had the right stuff to be considered for that kind of an elite program. Well, when people look at your life as a godly person, as a Christian, they see you being successful at whatever it is that you do. And I want to be careful not to define success and as the world defines it. I'm not talking about whether your name appears on the front page of any newspaper or whether you've risen to the top of some profession that the world considers to be impressive. If you're a street sweeper, I'm asking, when people look at your life, do they see the person who does that job better than it's ever been done before? Do people see success in your life? Well, I hope they do. Whatever it is that your life's endeavor, presuming that you have some kind of career or vocation, there's something that's your work in this world to do, I hope that when people look at you, they see a life that is succeeding at whatever it is that you intend to succeed at. Whatever it is you do it as well as it can be done. I'm afraid that people too often think godliness gets in the way of being successful. Now, godliness will certainly get in the way of being successful if you contemplate some kind of ungodly career. I presume if you wanted to be a prostitute and be the best prostitute there ever had been in the world, the Word of God would somewhat interfere with that. But assuming that what it is that you're working in this world is a godly thing that could be done with integrity, let me tell you, being godly won't hold you back at all. What will hold you back is not having the right stuff. If you're a musician and you contemplate some career as a musician, there are going to be a lot of decision points along the way. You'll be faced with choices between what's right and what's wrong. And there maybe have to be some sacrifices, particularly if you're going to make a living as an entertainer. There'll be some things you can't do. You know, some things that godliness would, you know, some paths that godliness would prohibit you from going down. But don't, if you're a musician, don't blame your lack of success as a musician on God's Word. If you've got the right stuff to be successful as a musician, then you'll be successful and godliness will help you do that. Daniel wasn't just a godly man. He had learned how to be a smart man of capability and skill. He didn't just have character, he had competence. And God doesn't just give you that on a silver platter. You've got to earn it. You've got to work hard to acquire the tools to do what you do in the very best way you can do it. You've got to acquire the right stuff. But if you don't do it, and then you fail in your career, don't blame it on godliness. Blame it on the fact that you just didn't have the right stuff. Daniel had the right stuff, and so no test of his character that ever came along held him back. That have temporarily barred him from this or that, But in the long term, he became one of the most powerful, influential politicians in several empires, his godliness notwithstanding. And so chapter 6, verse 3 says he distinguished himself even above the elite in the kingdom. Sort of like Moses, you know, as a young man. Acts chapter 7, verse 22, Stephen said that Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and deeds. I've been privileged to know several tremendously successful people in my lifetime. And I stand in admiration of people who have just knocked the ball out of the park in their careers without ever once compromising their principles. That's the kind of person Daniel was. And so if you're going to have the influence that he had, you're going to have to not only work on your godliness, you're going to have to work on your competence. You're going to have to get good at whatever it is you do, and then use godliness as a means of advancing that influence rather than blaming on godliness your lack of influence simply because you didn't acquire the skills that were necessary. Godliness is no substitute for expertise. Don't think if you're a brain surgeon that just because you're a godly person that godliness is going to make you the best brain surgeon in the world. No, you'll have to acquire those skills on your own. God will help you do that. But you want to be a Daniel. You want to acquire not only character, but competence. Lastly this morning, we'll put the bookmark after this point and then consider the rest of the points next week. The characteristic of Daniel was that he had acquired daily habits that helped him. This episode here in Daniel 6, where now it's illegal to pray for 30 days. What are you going to do, Daniel? Chapter 6, verse 10 said he went home that day and prayed three times with his windows open, just like he always had. Since the days of childhood, it says he had been doing that. I can't overestimate to you how important it will be when you get to be Daniel's age to have the benefit of habits that you have acquired since your childhood. Now, it is possible. It is possible to live a wicked life and come to the Lord at the end of a long life and serve him for however many days remain in your life and go to heaven. And in eternity, all will be well. But if you become a Christian early in life and then you waste the younger years of your life not building godly habits, living a weak, watery life as far as your commitment to the Lord is concerned, and you think, well, you know, I'm going to become strong spiritually when I'm an older person. And one of these days, I'm going to start working on my faith and building strong habits, but not right now. Got other things to do right now. So you put off building godly habits. Let me tell you, when the day of the big test comes, you're not going to be ready. The devil is plenty smart enough to know that he needs to hit you with the big one before you've gotten ready. And I'll just tell you, faith is not something that, like a water faucet that you just go over and turn it on and draw up a big bucket of it when you need it. You don't have to work on building it. It's just always there available for you if you do need some. That's not the way it works. Daniel could take the stand that he took in Daniel chapter 6, probably at age 90, largely because he had been practicing for that day every day previously. He had built habits that had created momentum in his life that helped him when the big test came. That's not to say that given the freedom of your will, you can't choose to do what's right, even if you haven't been doing what's right up to that point. But let me tell you, it'll require a whole lot more strength to overcome the momentum of an ungodly life that you've lived because of negligence and laziness and procrastination, failing to build strength when the big test comes. It's going to require a whole lot more power to blast the rocket off of the launch pad than the person who's been building strength and building strength and building strength, and then when the big test comes, doing what's right for them is a whole lot easier because they've learned how to do that by doing it over and over and over again. I'm not a physicist, but they tell me that it takes more power to lift one of those shuttle rockets off the launch pad in the first few seconds when all that, those tons and tons and tons of weight are sitting there not moving at all. The energy that it takes to lift that off of the launch pad for the first few seconds is more than what will be required for the entire rest of the journey. And once it's lifted off and has reached, you know, a speed of hundreds of miles a second and it's in orbit, then it takes very little power to change the direction of it one way or the other. But getting off the launch pad is hard because there's no momentum. All the inertia is just at rest. It's not moving, and to get it moving when it hasn't been moving requires a lot of power. If you don't get moving in your life day by day by day, practicing making hard decisions, getting some momentum going in the right direction, moving, not being at rest, but moving in God's direction, then when the big test comes, as it did for Daniel in chapter 6, you're already moving in that direction, and it won't require near as much power to blast you off as it will a person who's been living an ungodly life just sitting there doing nothing. So what kind of habits are you acquiring? Paul talks in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 7 and 8, a passage that we mentioned a minute ago, about the discipline of godliness. Exercise yourself rather to godliness. There's a training program, a training regimen that has to be entered into if you're ever going to be strong. If you're going to be a Daniel, you're going to have his integrity, and when the big test comes, you're going to meet it like he did. That's probably going to be the result of doing what he did, and that is way back up the line, you've been day by day by day making choices to do what's right, and so then when the big day comes, you'll make the choice to do what's right again, because that's, like Daniel, that's what you've been doing since childhood. Habit can be a vicious thing if you've developed bad habits by negligence and procrastination. If you become weak, then your habits have become your master, and it's hard to overtake them. But habits can be our helpers. We'll pay the price to build good habits, and the earlier you start on that, the better off you'll be. Day after day, year after year, decade after decade, keep on doing what's right. Eventually, doing what's right will become habitual with you, and you'll find those habits to be your best friend when the big test comes. But it takes a lot of years of practicing doing what's right. So in conclusion, influence, whether it's Daniel's or yours or mine or anybody else's, and influence always comes from three things. Character, godly character. Competence, that is skill and expertise in whatever it is that you do. And thirdly, courage to do what's right when you know it. You got character, competence, and courage, especially in the hard moments. And you can be like a Daniel, and you can do what's right even if nobody else is doing it, and it'll have tremendous influence, as we see in Daniel's life. I was reading just the other day again in 1 Samuel 14, where Jonathan, Saul's son, asked his armor bearer, he said, let's go over there and attack the garrison of the Philistines. And let's just see what God will do if we'll go over there. And his armor bearer said, are you crazy? I'm paraphrasing here. You crazy? It's just two of us. And Jonathan rightly said, the Lord can save with many or a few. Let's just go over there and see what he'll do. If they kill us, they'll kill us. But the Lord might accomplish a great deal. And he did. Just the two of them. They slew the entire Philistine garrison. Much more good done than what you'd think if you were just looking at the outward situation. That's the way it always is. Don't you ever, faced with a hard choice between right and wrong, say, well, I could go ahead and do what's right, but it won't do any good. Don't you ever say that. You do what's right, as Daniel did, consistently, great good will come from it, whether you ever know about it or not, even if you're the only one. So put the middle bookmark there, and we'll continue that line of thought again in one of the lessons next Lord's Day, Lord willing. We want to conclude this lesson by extending the Lord's invitation. If you've not obeyed the Lord in the past, it's probably been because of a lack of character on your part. You've not been in the habit of choosing in the hard moments to do what's right. And maybe to start doing that now will require a tremendous amount of energy to lift you off of the launching pad. But the Lord will help you with that if you're determined to do what's right, and we would certainly encourage you and help you in any way that we can. And we want to conclude this lesson by inviting you to come down front if you have some need that we can help you with spiritually. Let us know of that so that together we can encourage one another to do what's right. If we can help you, won't you come forward as we stand and sing?
Jesus, the loving shepherd, gave his dear life for thee. Tenderly now he's calling, wanderer, come to me. Haste, for without is danger. Come, Christ the shepherd, bless. Jesus, my shepherd divine, lingering is but folly. Wolves are abroad today, seeking the sheep who's straying, seeking the lambs to slay. Jesus, the loving shepherd, tenderly calling is he. Wanderer, wanderer, come unto me. Patiently waiting there, standing I see. Jesus, my shepherd divine.
Please be seated.